Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Ray. Ray Pritchard is in Kansas City, Kansas, where it's snowing heavily. Is that right?
It is. It had really started coming down since the program began. I'm not going outside today, folks.
And is the wind howling?
It was. We had this kind of horizontal blowing snow a few minutes ago, you know, where it's kind of going sideways. So, Steve, you know all about that.
I do. I sense that there's going to be a Miami speaking engagement in your near future.
I'm being called to Florida.
That's right.
How many years did you live in Colorado Springs?
15. 15
you saw,
years.
You saw
tons of snow.
Plenty of that.
I kind of miss it, too. We're supposed to maybe get some in the middle of the night tonight when it gets really still
yeah.
raining, precipitating.
Yeah.
I might just,
the ground's too warm here for it to stick.
It will stick. It never sticks. Yeah, but yeah. It's fun to see it coming down again.
By the way, before we move on to the back to the news, I just want to thank Louisiana State University and the University of Alabama for an extremely entertaining college football game Saturday.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch that.
But you're an NFL guy.
Yeah.
Right, more or less. Ray, did you watch Alabama?
The greatest college game of the year, right?
Man, that was fun to watch.
That was good.
Just back and forth. Two great teams and two great – I mean, they just got a lot of players out there. In the end, LSU won on Alabama's home field, which –
You got to love Coach O, you know. I mean, he's just out there, right? I won't even try to do that voice, Tim. He's just out there. He's like a, you know, Nick Saban. He's kind of cerebral. He's like, you know,
right.
He's up,
you know, right.
He's in another category. Ed Orgeron, you kind of think, come in, sit down, and talk to.
Go Tigers! Go Tigers!
We're coming. Yeah. We're coming.
You're coming. Go Tigers!
Oh man, that's a. But what's funny about Coach Orgeron from LSU is he's a Louisiana native, and you can tell it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
From South Louisiana.
Right,
and
right.
And so he's kind of a home state guy. And but anyway, it was just a very entertaining football game. And I guess tomorrow night we'll find out, but I'm assuming LSU will rise to number one in the country.
They got to be number one, right?
In the college playoffs.
Well, who was number one last week?
Ohio State.
Ohio
and did
State.
They win?
Well,
yeah,
they did, but they
put a whooping on Maryland.
They only scored 72 points.
73, yeah.
Ohio State would still be number two.
Got to be.
But you got to reward LSU for winning.
Okay, Tim, does Alabama stay in the top four, or do they drop out of the
– well, I would
– the
Yes, I would put them at number four. I would put Clemson at number three and put Alabama at number four. That's what I would do. Because, I mean, you still only lost to the number one team by, what, 5 points?
Right.
So there's no shame in that. You know, of course, the shocking thing is nobody ever beats Alabama in Tuscaloosa.
Penn State is currently number four.
But they got beat by Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
I tell you, that's the fun Cinderella story nationally right there. Of course, Baylor's undefeated too. Let me just say that. I know people aren't listening for a college football breakdown here, but I can't help myself.
But Baylor is good. Minnesota and Baylor are great. They're great stories this year.
Minnesota is the Cinderella team, and Baylor too. But Minnesota just knocked off Penn State on Saturday. Penn State was ranked number four. Minnesota is now undefeated.
Right.
The Golden Gophers.
They've got an argument.
This may be their year to rise to the top. Anyway, a lot of football, college football yet to be played. But that was one fun game to watch on Saturday, LSU and Alabama. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family, and the president was there too, by the way.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
President Trump was in attendance.
Didn't hear any boos. It sounded like a rousing cheer of support.
Yeah, that's what I heard. They were yelling. They were applauding him, being respectful of the president. And even cheering him, some who were. But, you know, the thing I was kind of surprised with, Ray, if you saw the CBS's television, you know, when they panned over to the president and the first lady, he was just in open air.
Right.
Did you see that?
I saw that. It makes you stop and think. We're not used to seeing it.
People knew he was going to be there.
Sure.
I would just be curious about the security, how they handled that Secret Service. I mean, you can't.
Well, I think they made everybody go. You had to come two or three hours early. Yes, I think everybody just like at an airport. I think that they screened all 100,000 people.
Well, 103,000 people at the stadium on Saturday. I guess 103,002 because you had the First Lady and the President.
It's interesting.
And the Secret Service, so maybe whatever right. they whatever
30 they're. Or 40. We're going to hear a little bit later on, we're going to hear President Trump from his New York speech. Veterans, he was attending the parades in New York, the Veterans Day parades. Happy Veterans Day, everybody. Thank you for your service. He was standing behind a bulletproof glass cage. He was in a bulletproof glass cage in New York City.
Okay.
So they couldn't protect him on the street, on the parade route. Mm-hmm. So that was striking to me to see him behind glass.
All right, Steve, go ahead.
Well,
you were going to ask last hour. I had mentioned the fact that on Saturday I saw the movie Midway, which is about the pivotal the war.
It's the turning point of the Pacific.
The pivotal battle in the war in the Pacific during World War II with the Japanese and the U.S. In the U.S., but I had asked a question which Fred or Ray didn't feel like they knew the answer to, but you do, I think you do, and that is, what was the motivation, what was the reason why the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor?
Japan has a lot of good quality, well, they have a lot of beauty and a lot of nature, but they don't have oil. So they were dependent on oil from the Middle East, and the United States was blockading or threatening to blockade the oil coming to Japan, which had already invaded China and was on their quest for an empire. They also had vision out into the Pacific, and so the United States was getting in the way of them getting oil. It was going to cripple their ability to make war, and so that's why the United States decided to attack Pearl Harbor to get the fleet out of the way so that they could import their oil.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Thank you for that history lesson there. I didn't realize that. I know at the first of the movie, there's a conversation between, you know, an American and a Japanese high-ranking official, and they're discussing the possibility of war between the U.S. and Japan 2 or 3 years in advance of Pearl Harbor.
Well, just the weeks or the days before Pearl Harbor, the Japanese ambassador was at the White House speaking with President Roosevelt, and they were feigning that they were reaching some kind of a compromise, which was going to keep peace between the two countries, which they
Japan was attacking and had invaded mainland China.
They had done that several years prior. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but they needed war to support their troops.
They needed oil.
I mean, oil. What did I say? Excuse me. Oil to support their troops, and the U.S. was threatening that. So thus the attack on Pearl Harbor. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. All right, Steve.
Peter King, Republican from New York, is the latest House of Representative member who says he's not going to seek re-election in 2020. There are now 4 senators and now 18 House members who've announced plans not to seek re-election. Ray, I don't know why or how this doesn't look good for the Republicans in Congress in 2020.
Well, it certainly is a blow, isn't it, to the Republican hopes of taking back the House. I don't know how realistic that was anyway, but we have all these Republican representatives suddenly retiring, spending more time with their family, whatever. It seems like it was an uphill climb anyway to take the House back, but it seems like it has gotten a lot steeper.
A lot of these guys are in Republican safe districts. I don't know. I haven't looked to see where Peter King's district is. He had plenty of support and money. He said he had good polling numbers and he has more than $1 million in campaign funds, but he said he's out.
Yeah. I like him when I see him on TV.
He's well spoken.
Yeah, Peter King from New York, especially on national security issues.
Yeah,
and so, but he's got. Well, how old is he? Does it say?
He's 70-something.
75 years
75,
old.
75, there you go.
You know, 75, you need to.
He can run for president in 24 yeah. if he wants to.
Duly noted.
He might have to run against Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He'd lose that battle,
by the way. 75.
Sure. Yes.
You know, to me, 75, absolutely, I'm retiring.
Yeah.
From Washington and the Congress, if you want. What do you got, 10 years maybe left in your life?
It has
become. You know
what
I'm saying? Of health. I'm talking yeah. about if you're blessed, 10 to 15, so.
It has become so poisonous, the atmosphere in Congress. Right. It's not like even during the Obama years, the Republicans were the loyal opposition, but there was collegiality.
Yeah.
It has broken down completely
yeah.
now.
Yeah, you're 75 years old. You get tired of
my hassle.
You get tired of that. Let some younger guy do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Another man who wants to be president on the Democrat side is Julian Castro. But Julian Castro is not making friends in the Midwest. He said
he's the former, former mayor of San Antonio.
Former mayor of San Antonio.
He's running on the Democrat side.
He's running on the Democrat side. He's not polling that well, and I think he realizes he's not polling that well in Iowa and New Hampshire. He thinks that we need to move the first in the nation primaries from Iowa and New Hampshire to some other place because Iowa and New Hampshire, not his words, but they're too white. This is cut 10.
We do need to change the order of the states because I don't believe that that we're the same country we were in 1972. That's when Iowa first held its caucus first. And by the time we have the next presidential election in 2024, it'll have been more than 50 years since 1972. Our country has changed a lot in those 50 years. The Democratic Party has changed a lot. They give people a good hearing. At the same time, demographically, it's not reflective of the United States as a whole, certainly not reflective of the Democratic Party.
What do you think?
We hear that every 4 years, don't we? It's not like this is a new thing. We heard this 4 years ago and 4 years before that. I mean, the early scheduling of the primaries and caucuses, that's not, I'm thinking out loud, that's not set by the state government, is it? I mean, that's set by the parties themselves, right?
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
So they could change it if they want to.
They could.
The National Democrat Party could change it if they wanted to.
You'd have a lot of really mad voters in Iowa and New Hampshire. They take
I mean,
pride
that's a big
in
deal
that.
For both those states.
Yeah, they take pride in that.
Well, I know that you get some early momentum, but that's not the only, the Super Tuesday's the big deal, really. You do get some momentum from Iowa and from New Hampshire if you win it, be it a Republican or a Democrat when you're running for president. But the big deal is when you have all those states on that Super Tuesday. And so it isn't like the non-white Democrats aren't able to vote and be a part of the – you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So I just I would be surprised if the Democrat Party moved it, moved there. But they may, and that's their choice.
Yep.
But you're right. That's what he was saying.
Yeah.
In that, right. He said it without saying
Yeah. He's not saying, quite diverse enough.
Right. Yeah. I wonder what the percentage of minorities are in – by minorities, I mean racial minorities, anything other than white are in those two states. Iowa are. Iowa or New Hampshire.
Leave that to our trusty listeners or
you know, that this is part of the romance of politics. I mean, you see the guys going to Ed's Diner, you know,
right.
outside of Portsmouth and talking to these guys and it's sort of to me, it's sort of charming. They're going to the PTA meetings and the Rotary Clubs. It's the only time you ever really think about New Hampshire on a national basis. It's their moment in the sun. They're gonna fight like anything to keep their place, right?
Right. Geographically it's a good start, I think, for primaries. You go from the Midwest, Iowa, right? Mm-hmm. To New England. And then they don't they drop down to South Carolina after
that? South Carolina usually next.
So you're hitting almost everything but the West Coast there in terms
which
of
which is really well. I guess it is a contest in the primaries.
Yeah. I don't. Why don't they just do this? Why don't they just have all your primaries on one day? All the states on the same day. What's wrong with that?
Super Duper Tuesday.
Maybe that right. favors the wealthiest.
Right. Well, then there's no momentum at all, right? It's yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. You know, I'm just throwing stuff out there. I'm not the only one to
get it over with.
Start of that.
You would absolutely thrash your candidates who have to be in all those places in the, sure. in the weeks
but
it, leading
but
up it, to it.
But it would be fair to everyone. Everybody would have to do that, right?
Yeah.
Well, it certainly favored the it certainly favored the people with the money in the organization. Right?
Yeah.
There's no way an upstart candidate would ever have a chance.
No. That's the whole thing. Somebody surprises people and comes out in Ohio sure. or Iowa, and then all of a sudden,
well, maybe that's a good reason.
Maybe
that's a good reason to do it like they're doing it. Not all on the same day. What do I know?
Did you hear who's trying to get in? Who's looking to get into the Democrat race now?
Bloomberg.
Michael Bloomberg. Yeah. You know, the Democrats who have been railing on billionaires,
right.
and they can't rail on millionaires anymore because all of the candidates actually are those. But none of them are billionaires except for Tom Steyer and maybe Michael Bloomberg. And so he's coming in kind of in the middle ground. He's thinking he could be a moderate. I want you to hear a little bit about what the media is saying. Listen to how these are – I don't know who all is talking here, but it's mainstream media – and it is, listen to how they talk about Bloomberg and then also how they talk about the president. Cut nine.
The real billionaire, the former New York City mayor, Michael Bloomberg, preparing a potential run.
He is the real deal of what Trump purports to be. He's probably the most, certainly most successful businessman in New York, one of the 5 or 10 most successful businessmen in the country.
Truth is, if he stands on a stage with Donald Trump, I think he matches up very well. He's actually a businessman. He's actually a billionaire. He's actually a philanthropist. He's all the things that Trump pretends to be.
In the smoke-filled room, you'd say, on paper, Bloomberg has the right balance of what you want to win a broad election.
The bumper sticker for Michael Bloomberg is Donald Trump, but richer, more successful, and less offensive.
You're coming riding in on a white horse.
Yeah, but he can't win the Democratic nomination, can he?
Well, that's going to be the question. It depends on... if, you know, the voters love the thought of free stuff. They love the thought of not paying college tuition. They love the thought of taking away Bloomberg's and Bill Gates's and everybody's billions and knocking them down a rank or two. And so there's some, among the left, there's some appetite for that. We know that none of those things are, well, maybe the wealth tax, but certainly none of the free things are ever going to happen because they are financially impossible. But they still promise them. So if Bloomberg comes in and plays the middle road, he might appeal to some realistic Democrats.
Okay, but then what about Biden? Does he then push Biden out? Does he replace Biden as the, quote, moderate Democratic candidate?
Yeah, he said that, or his team said he was waiting to see what was going to happen with Biden. Biden is on the way down. He's like third now, and he's running out of money, and people don't expect Biden to last the campaign season.
Wow.
There's going to be a fight. Probably, if Bloomberg gets in, it's going to be a fight like we haven't seen in a while inside the Democrat Party, because, first of all, you can say goodbye to Joe Biden, because if Bloomberg gets in, he thinks Biden doesn't have a chance, right?
Yeah, right.
And he's going to take his place, basically. That's the reason he's getting in. And then you got Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, and they're at war with people like ideologically.
Sure.
And politically, they're at war with people like Michael Bloomberg. They think that those people are too rich and they need to give their money to the state or take it from them because they believe in socialism.
Who was it that was talking about taxing the billionaires the other day?
It was
Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
Bill
Gates got into it.
Got a wealth tax.
Now, Elizabeth Warren and Michael Bloomberg would agree on all the social issues. Okay, they're both going to be very pro-choice, is what they would call it. I call it pro-abortion. They're going to be able to push the LGBT agenda as hard as you can all over the place. Now, where they're going to diverge is you get into economic issues. I don't know about taxes, but I do know. Michael Bloomberg, he wouldn't be getting into the race if he agreed with Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders on soaking the rich, like they talk about, all right, or wealth tax.
Yeah.
And so Bill Gates talked about this last week, and Mark Zuckerberg's talked about this too. Elizabeth Warren makes him very nervous, okay?
Yeah.
Makes him very nervous. And despite that they're, quote, progressives on many issues, when it comes to their money, they're not. They're Rush Limbaughs, okay, when it comes to their money. They get very antsy about you taking their money.
In fact, Bill Gates, conservative by anybody's description, wouldn't rule out voting for Trump if it was Trump against Warren.
Right. That's how worried they are about Warren. That ought to tell you something right there. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. If you want to send us an email, you can use this address, comments@afr.net. comments@afr.net. You're listening to Today's Issues. We got about 4 minutes left here. Ray Pritchard with me, Tim Wildman, and Steve Jordahl. Steve, next story.
We got an important day at the Supreme Court tomorrow. Tomorrow's Tuesday, and the Supreme Court is going to hear the Trump administration's challenge to the DACA program that President Obama put into place via an executive order. And several lower courts have said you can't undo that. But the government is arguing anything that you can do with a pen and a phone, you can undo with a pen and a phone. Unless Congress decides they want to put it into law.
I would agree with that.
But judges haven't. So the Supreme Court is going to weigh in on this tomorrow. And
well, they're not going to weigh in tomorrow. They're going to hear the case, right?
Well, they're going to hear the case. They're starting the process.
They'll be the Supreme Court, if they're hearing a case now, they're probably going to make an announcement in February.
Well, and this is the interesting thing. It could come February. It could come June or July in the heat of the battle, of the political battle. That, I don't think, would be good news for President Trump.
What typically happens, I don't know if this is an absolute, but the Supreme Court, if they hear cases now, that is in the fall, they make the announcement of their decision in February, usually. And then they're also hearing cases in January and February in which they make their announcements of their decisions in June.
Yes.
So it's usually a 4 or 5 month.
Of course, they can change that if they want.
Sure.
If they feel it's in the best interest of the country, or for something that needs to be decided right away, they can change that time frame. But even February is going to be a pretty large election issue, I think. If DACA kids, these so-called dreamers, lose their protected status, that I don't know how the president he thinks that's in his favor.
That's an emotionally complicated issue.
That's a good way to put it. Emotionally complicated.
Yeah. I see both sides on that one. I'm pro border security. I'm pro immigration enforcement. But when you start talking about people who were brought here, who this is the only country they've ever known, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're talking about shipping them back to some country they have nothing to do with, except that their parents came from there. I know I'm making some people mad right now, but I'm sorry. That just seems. I don't like that. I don't like that. This seems wrong. But that's, you know, I'm willing to be persuaded the other way. All right. So, we will see you tomorrow, folks. Have a great day. Keep listening to American Family Radio.